name's Joseph. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be live and sober. Thanks for you guys for asking me to share. Oh, thank you. Perfect. And I always share that because when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous this time, man, I did this inventory and my actions and had proved that I had no value for my own life, man. And it's insanity, man. I look back at that way of living and it's just like I'm appalled about over the things I would do, you know. The people I separated myself from all for the effect and the pursuit of getting and staying loaded. You know what I mean? I just, I'm cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know what I mean? Those words absolutely applied to my life. So, disconnection, like isolation, that's been a big part of my life for a lot of years. You know, when I was probably like a year and a half old, my mom split up with my dad here in town and moved us down to Palm Springs. You know, she didn't know anybody. She had no friends. Not sure why she did it. She's a very calculated person, my mom. I love the woman. Don't completely understand her. Might never completely understand her, but or any woman for that matter. But that's okay. I'm okay with that. But no, but it's just, you know, as time goes by and I've stayed sober for a while, I start to see my parents in me, you know what I mean? The different traits that they've handed down to me. And even today, man, just being alone, I'm perfectly okay with that a lot of times. I don't need to be surrounded by a lot of people. Just doing stuff by myself seems okay with me, you know what I mean? And I see how that trait from my mom was handed down to me, and then yet my dad's like completely the opposite of that. He's very, you know, he's all about family together, and very accepting man. Very like he's the rock of unconditional love I've had, that example in my life, you know. And where it seems my mom, she's always had like stipulations on the love, you know what I mean? Like just kind of like, if you're doing good, then we're doing good type deal. You know what I mean? So I've struggled with a lot of that. You know, I've struggled with a lot of that. And I've struggled with a lot of things in life, just like all of us do. And I don't know, man. You know, being sober is like, I'm able to like look at those parts of my life and see how they continually affect me way down the, decades down the line. You know what I mean? And it with that enlightenment comes that responsibility to work on those things, I believe. You know what I mean? I think that's basically what recovery is to me, man. Seeing those shortcomings and becoming willing to address them, you know? And I don't know, man. There's a lot of there's some things going on in my life, you know, before I ever took a drink, man, that like when I found that effect that alcohol provided for me, man, it was just like I found it, you know what I mean? Like that disconnection, that's what alcohol is for me, just that disconnection, you know what I mean? Like unplug, you know what I mean? Mentally, physically, emotionally, just disconnect it all, you know what I mean? That's what I get out of it. And I didn't know that escape was going to become my prison later on, you know? I didn't know that, but it definitely did. And I don't know, you know, everybody, I hear people, I remember my first drink. I don't remember my first drink of alcohol. I grew up with my mom and my stepdad who, there was a lot of alcohol around the house as well as, you know, some other controlled substances. And I don't know when I took my first drink. I was a little kid, you know, I was just running around the house. This shit's sitting right here like a thing of water, you know what I mean? It's like Budweiser and pot and cocaine, and I don't know when I took my first drink, you know, but I remember being pretty young. I do remember feeling really the effect for the first time, you know. I was about 12 years old, and I stole some alcohol and some pot from my stepdad, and went out with some other kids, you know, from the neighborhood, and I guess I got a little wasted that night, you know what I mean? I remember throwing up all over the place, and it being pretty ugly when I got home, because my mom knew, you know what I mean, and I was unacceptable to her. Yet it's all over the house. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It seems kind of hypocritical. You know what I mean? Like, I know that adults are able to do things that children are not able to, but I think today that, in my mind today, I should be an example. You know, I should be a living example to children, especially children that are close to me. You know what I mean? So, then again, I don't blame my parents on anything. You know, I have a choice and I have a part in everything that I've done in my life. And, but I chose to pursue that effect. You know what I mean? And it allowed me to disconnect from what I was feeling. You know, even just the natural discomfort of growing up as a child. You know what I mean? It's like, and then, you know, I was molested as a young boy by a male family member, and just that whole mind trip, man, just pulling away from that, you know, emotionally and mentally, that's where alcohol stepped in. You know what I mean? It allowed me to just not feel about that stuff, and that worked for me for a long time. So when I was 13 years old, I moved back up here to live with my dad, and it's just like pulling a fish out of water, man. I'm out of my environment, you know. I fell in with the kids, you know, the kind of the whatever you want to call them of school, you know what I mean? The flotsam jetsam of society, you know, and fall in doing what we do, you know, getting loaded. You know what I mean? That just seemed like natural, you know. And that's not what my dad's household was about. My dad was a strict Christian, you know, and church every was it Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday.
Church every Sunday. I haven't been to church in a minute. So those things were very unacceptable in my dad's house. And there was a lot of discipline going on. And discipline was done in two different ways by both of my parents. My mom disciplined out of anger, and my father disciplined out of love. And there's two totally different deals, you know what I mean? My mom had no control. She had a lot of rage in her, and she would discipline me with that rage. And that affected me in a way that I didn't know until way down the line. It's like, that hurt my feelings more than it hurt me, you know what I mean? That when I saw my mom in that rage, that she couldn't control herself, that had a mind trip on me, man. And then and my dad disciplined out of love, you know, and I felt that, and I got his message when he disciplined me. Anyways, these are just things that mold. These are the things that molded me, you know what I mean? Really, like these parts of growing up. And So I moved up here, San Luis Obispo, growing up, started surfing, skateboarding with those guys, and that seemed to be our lifestyle, pretty chaotic lifestyle, you know, that turns out to be drinking. Moved in with when I was 16, I moved out of my dad's house. He's like, you either do this or you gotta go, you know what I mean? He saw that I was out of control and that he couldn't control me. There might have been some other avenues that he could have tried that would have had some different effect. But he allowed me to move out when I was 16. And I moved in with my buddy who, that was kind of a party pad. And his mom was with this guy who grew weed out in the Sierras. And a couple times a year we would go out there and it was just total madness out there. Absolutely no direction or responsibility. And I was still kind of going to high school at the time, barely scraping by, getting grades. I've never done good academically. Like, I'd get by when I applied myself, but I was never really good at anything that I liked about school, you know. I really actually like mathematics. I like math, but I'm terrible at it. I have no idea what I'm so interested about it, but English, like these things, I could just bullshit my way through school. I'd be the type of kid who would, you know, go to the parent-teacher conference, and the teacher would be like, he hasn't turned in these assignments. And then they'd look at my folder, and they were all done. You know what I mean? They'd be like, why didn't you turn this stuff in? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get school. You know, I just don't get it. It's it's not interesting to me. You know what I mean? Like, I got better things to do. Getting loaded was more important to me. And my dad, he owned a masonry business, and that's a block, brick, and stonework, you know, hard work. And so I grew up with him doing that. My dad, he's a different cat on the job, man. Like, he's in your face, yelling at you, you know, and very straightforward, I guess would be a word to describe it. And then as soon as work's over, click, he's a different guy, you know what I mean? But I hold that, I'm like pissed off, you know, after work. I hold that with me, you know. And I grew up with a lot of animosity towards my dad, you know. Good man. Today I got nothing but good things to say about my own father. And it's taken a long time to come through that, work through those resentments that I had against him. The mistakes he's made, I've held over him, you know, held over our relationship for a lot of years. And big mistakes, you know, kind of like do what I say, not what I do type stuff, you know, and struggle with that for a lot of years. But so 16, 18 years old, got kicked out of high school in the senior year, beginning of the senior year. We were drinking in the parking lot and I think we had to use the tow hitch to open the bottle because we didn't have a can opener, bottle opener or something. We got caught drinking, and that was like the last straw. They kicked three of us out of high school for good. I got the GED. I passed the test, no problem. And my dad's like, you're getting a job. You know, I'm not going to just watch you throw your life away. So I've had all these, you know, odds and end jobs, and then I fell into framing construction, you know, because I couldn't work with my dad, could not stand the man. So I fell into framing construction, rough trade, man. Not a very nurturing environment. I know some of you guys have been in the construction trades, and it's not a very nurturing environment for anybody to be growing up in. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a very belittling. It can be very belittling at times, you know, and harsh place to be as a kid, you know. But it's good money at the same time. And money is what allows me to keep getting loaded, you know. So I, 18 years old, I met my future wife and then ex-wife. But 18 years old, I met Jamie, the mother of my daughter. 19 years old, right before I turned 20, we had a child, my first child. And now I remember this is an enlightening day for me. That is June 13th, 1996, the day my daughter was born. There was some heaviest thing I ever been a part of, man. Heaviest day of my life. And there was some complications in the delivery. I've seen some things that I hope I never have to see again. But anyways, I'd just been a part of the most powerful thing that I've ever experienced, you know, that day. And I remember I remember clearly, it was kind of like an emotional blackout that whole day, you know what I mean? It's just everything going on, and it's just hard to process. And then I remember asking the doctor, so when can we go home? And he said, well, you know, your wife and child, they need to stay the night because, you know, so we can regulate and watch over them because of the complications that they had. But you're free to go at any time. And I remember in my head thinking, I asked the question because I wanted to go home and get and tie one on. You know what I mean? I wanted to go get drunk. You know, and that very thought prompted the next thought that you might have a problem with alcohol, man. You know, I was just like, here's this beautiful baby and your wife, you know, all you can think about is going home and getting drunk, you know what I mean? And that was the very first time that I ever, in my mind, came the thought that I might have a problem, you know, 19 years old. And did I do anything about it? No, absolutely not. In fact, things just got worse. What I forgot to mention was at 16 years old, I found methamphetamine, you know, and that became just a strong part of my life as alcohol was. You know, it was like the two combined for me are where it's at. You know, that's kind of my drug of choice. You know, and Jack Daniels and methamphetamine seem to do it for me. You know, the combination. Very expensive, very taxing spiritually, emotionally, physically. And I rode that train for a lot of years. And when I was 25, you know, my wife had, she had pretty much had enough, you know, of the just chaos, living life the way I was living, friends in and out of the house all the time. We have, I think she was 3 or 4 years old at the time, daughter. And it's just not a very healthy environment to be trying to be a father, to be a friend, and to be on time to work and to be loaded all the time. You know what I mean? It's just, it's hard to keep all those things in line. And the truth is I chose getting loaded over all those other things. You know what I mean? And 25 years old, my wife at the time, we had been married a couple years by then. She had had enough. She said I had to leave, but at the same time, she was like, please get some help. You know what I mean? I want nothing more than to be with you, you know? I want us to be a family. I want us to be together. You know, she stressed that. And still, I couldn't see the severity of my condition. I could not see it. And it's like I always akin it to walking through with the blinders on, you know what I mean? Walking blindly through life. So I'm out of the house, and you know, it's like that whole time with having a baby, and it was a beautiful time, but at the same time, like I hear like guys like Stan and other people share, it was like I was resentful because I had to hide, you know, where and what I was doing and how I really wanted to be doing it, you know, and it was hard. You know, I wanted to, what I want in alcohol and narcotics is completely out of control. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know what control is. It's not, that's not fun to me. You know what I mean? What's fun to me is being blacked out and inebriated in every way. And why it came to that, I don't know, but that's just where I take it. So, 25, I move out, move in with some friends, get my own place eventually, taking advantage of every situation, every person that I come across, not being really a part of the kid's life, whether it be emotionally, very little physically, and definitely not financially, because all my money is going towards, you know, maintaining this what I'm doing, how I'm living. And it's extremely, extremely taxing. You know what I mean? When I say taxing physically, I just mean beat up. You know, I'm beat up from the things I'm doing to myself. I can barely hold down a job anymore. And shortly after, I quit working this. I've had jobs in the past where I was way overpaid, you know what I mean? Way overpaid for these construction jobs, you know, working on these state jobs, state-funded, you know, prevailing wage jobs, and just making mind-blowing amounts of money a week, a month, a year, and none of this stuff was important to me. You know, a kid, a wife, a house, a car, none of these things were important to me, you know? It's like, and soon they all started getting stripped away from me, one by one, you know? And you know, late 20s and early 30s, that was a rough time for me, man. I'm usually homeless, in and out of incarceration, pretty common for me. And when I, you know, it's easy for me to see the unmanageability of my life when I'm loaded, because, you know, I'm the type of person that gets put in jail for a period of time, whether it be a month or 6 months or, you know, even longer. I do really good while incarcerated. You know what I mean? It's like they clean you up, they give you food, they give you a place to stay. You know, they might even give you a little job to do, keep you busy. They turn the lights on for you, they turn them off for you. You know, and it's like I don't have to do anything. I don't have to think about anything except get up, move forward, and go back to bed. You know what I mean? And So it was easy to see the unmanageability of step one, you know, when I got here. That was really, it was pretty much a no-brainer for me. And so the early 30s, you know, I Thirty-four years old. I've been I've been on some type of probation since I was pretty much like 16 years old. You know, I'd get on for one thing, and then it would turn into something else, and then it would turn into something else, and it just seemed to never stop, and it just never seemed important to me to get off probation, because I knew that eventually I was going to be locked up one more time. You know what I mean? And I'd just clear it out in jail. You know what I mean? Just let me serve the time on it. I really don't care. You know, I'm not going to give you any money. I'm not going to do the right thing. And 34 years old. And, So my first 12-step meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, was I was in jail in San Luis County, and a friend was in there with me, suggested I go with him. He had had some time before at one time, and, you know, was looking into getting into recovery again. And, you know, he kind of urged me to go to this meeting. And this gentleman from, I think it's the Mesa meetings, his name was Doc, old-timer guy, and he came and shared the message with us in there. I remember him sharing his story. I don't remember a whole lot. I remember reading How It Works, and I just kind of remember just kind of breaking down a little bit during How It Works. I hadn't heard the truth in a lot of years, you know, and that's pretty much the one thing that scared me to death when I got into recovery, man. It wasn't incarceration. It wasn't being stripped of anything physically or materialistically. It wasn't guns and knives anymore. It was the truth, man. The truth about my life scared the shit out of me, you know? The truth about what I had done to people scared the shit out of me. The truth about what I had allowed to happen in my life and didn't have the courage to speak up about it, that shit scared the shit out of me. And this last time, so I got to Alcoholics Anonymous really... I think it was actually like 2009, and I got about 6 months of sobriety, and my aunt and uncle, they own a construction company who landed this contract out in Merced, at the University of Merced, and it was a really good job, one of those ones way overpaid, state-funded job, prevailing wage, you know, you got money for your wage, you got money for living, eating, all the, you know, because we were out of town, and I was rolling in some good money. And I had a little bit of time sober, and I moved over to Merced, and I was living with like 35, 40 other guys in these two houses out in the sticks. And it was just a party out there every day after work. You know, I had been going to meetings for a good 6 months. I said I had a sponsor, you know, but I had no mental defense against that first drink. You know, the very first opportunity, it's like, I'm right there. Somebody was talking about that before the meeting. Or who just took 25 years. It was like, it's in front of you, you just take it. You know, that's like natural, you know. And so that 6 months of sobriety, which wasn't really what I would consider recovery, you know, time in recovery, that went out the door like that day. And so I worked that job for 4 or 5 months, you know, and when I got laid off from that job, I had a substantial amount of money, you know, banked up, because it really cost nothing to live out there for us. And and I was already chipping away, you know. It took a while. I was drinking every day, but it took a while for me to come. I was coming home on the weekends. It took a couple of months for me to be stupid enough to go get the other drug of choice, you know, to go get some speed. And and I slowly chipped away at that, to where I needed that every day at work again too. You know what I mean? And my performance was lacking, and my attitude was actually crap. But the important thing about having been into meetings for that 6 months was I heard some things that stuck with me. You know what I mean? I heard you guys talk about the obsession of the mind, you know, and just that craving. Because I remember one day early in the morning, it was like 9 or 10, and it's hot there every day in the summer. It's relentless heat out there. And I remember one morning specifically thinking that I needed a drink, and the light clicked on for me. It was like, they're absolutely right, you know what I mean? Not only are you an alcoholic, but this shit, this book is truth for you. You know, the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is your truth. And so I got laid off. It was kind of late November, maybe earlier November. And it was November. and I blew through a lot of money. I blew through about, I can't remember, it was in between $12,000 and $15,000, and it was like in less than 30 days, you know, getting loaded. And Christmas came up, you know, that year. This was 2009. And I remember my aunt Gloria set me aside, and she could see right through everything about me at the time, you know, and it was humbling. It was a humbling experience. She's kind of like my mother in a way, you know, my dad's younger sister, and she could see right through me, you know, the facade I was putting up, and I broke down crying with her, you know what I mean? I hadn't cried in years, man. I hadn't cried in years. I didn't know what it was to just release that, you know what I mean? And Christmas wasn't it. It took, you know, for me, without money, without a job, to get and stay loaded is, I'm out there committing felonies, you know what I mean? It's just, it's where I take it. I surround myself with people that are like-minded, who have very little value for their own life, your life, my life, or anything, you know. Our pursuit is the effect that alcohol and narcotics provide for us, and whatever falls in line with that is okay, and whoever is hurt by that is of no consequence, seemingly at the time. So, January 2nd, I think. And it wasn't the first time that I've had bounty hunters come looking for me because of the things I was involved in. And they found me at this house in Oceano. And I just remember thinking, thank God they found me. You know what I mean? Because I can't stop on my own. No matter how bad I want to be done, no matter how tired I am, I cannot stop on my own. And that's how powerful alcoholism and drug addiction are in my life. And I know other people can relate to that. So, incarcerated one more time. It's just, I look at this whole first couple years, and it really opened my eyes to God's work, man. And they had my name wrong on the docket at court, you know, and they OR'd me, you know, with all these, with my past, it's unheard of, you know what I mean? And so I'm going to court in Santa Barbara because that's where I had these new charges. And they OR'd me, and they finally get my real docket, you know, with my name and all my current history. And they were pretty upset that they had OR'd me, you know what I mean? Especially with the past I had with the law. But all my past was with San Luis Obispo County. Santa Barbara County knew nothing about me. It was the first time I'd ever had anything go on there. So, but they saw that I was doing better. I had people from Alcoholics Anonymous coming to court with me to represent that I was doing something different. You know, these people had appointed themselves to me, basically. You know, I had in my mind, I'm like, people don't do this for nothing, you know. I didn't understand it, why they would come and support me. I'm like, I'm a piece of shit. Don't come and stand up for me, you know what I mean? I'll let you down. But they continued to come, and it was humbling, especially when they heard the charges that I had going on with me, you know what I mean? To hear the truth about me exposed to these people who are standing up for me was very humbling, man. And it really opened my eyes to what compassion really is, you know, and understanding, you know, even though these people hadn't necessarily walked down the path that I had, that they understood, you know what I mean? Just they understood the insanity of alcoholism, you know what I mean? And I'm really grateful for those people. I'm really grateful for the fellowship, you know, really grateful for the fellowship. And so I, you know, having had heard some things the first time I was doing meetings, man, I dove right in. You know, I immersed myself in not only the fellowship, but in the step work. You know, I got a sponsor right away, Daryl Nelson. And then I've had some other sponsors along the way too. You know, there's things that I struggle with about that man that I had to work out with myself, you know, and I've had other sponsors at the time, but at 1 year of sobriety, I'm still going to court for all this stuff. Still going to court for 3 more felonies. And at 1 year of sobriety, I called Daryl back up and I said, "I need your help, man." You know, and it wasn't until that time that I really started what I consider the process of recovery. You know what I mean? It started at about 1 year for me. And you know, like I said, it was easy to see the unmanageability for me. It was easy to see the powerlessness, you know, the power that alcohol and narcotics had in my life, you know. I remember reading that there's a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. I had lived my whole life by that principle, you know. I had lived my whole life. If I didn't want it, F it, you know what I mean? If I don't need it, I destroy it, you know? And it took, step two really, really took some work for me, you know what I mean? Because I had all these preconceived ideas about what God needed to be, about what God will be, and I just had to get open about what God could be, you know, in my life. And since that, it's just been an evolution, you know, of an understanding, you know what I mean? Continued. And I hope that that evolution never ceases, you know what I mean? Because it's important to me that I evolve with that, you know? And so step three, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. Absolutely. And step four and five, that's where the real work got involved for me, you know what I mean? Daryl does step four in... you know, we do the resentments, and then we do a list of basically a timeline of my whole life. You know what I mean? Just every, and where it says a moral inventory of ourselves. Moral just means truth. You know, the good and the bad. You know, we're not all 100% terrible people, and we have assets as well. You know what I mean? So, in that timeline, though, I was. Like I said, the truth about me scared the shit out of me, you know what I mean? And to open myself, to be vulnerable, to tell the truth about myself, that was a very humbling experience, you know? And I hadn't written everything down, you know, that part of about having been molested by, you know, my uncle at the time. And I had never shared that with anybody before I shared that with Daryl. You know, I swore to myself that I was just going to keep that down, you know what I mean? It's not that important, right? You know, when that's like one of the most important things I needed to let go of. So after I'm done with this list of resentments and this timeline, and we're looking at all this stuff, and I just looked at him and I said, "Look, there's something else I need to tell you," you know, and like it was going to be the first time he had ever heard something like this, you know what I mean? It's like, God, we come in here so distorted, you know what I mean? Like, and he gave me some direction in that and what I can do to start relieving myself of the power of that, you know, that I had held over myself for so many years. And I did the things he suggested, man, and I got further in the steps, and when it come to making amends, you know, what I've learned about the amends is It's a very uncomfortable process in the middle of it, but the rewards far outweigh the uncomfortable part of it. You know what I mean? And I've been able to restore relationships, you know, with some people, very important people in my life. My ex-wife, who is a very good friend of mine now, we collaborate on our child and just and on life in general, man. You know, it's an honor to, you know, I should have taken this woman at a much important, you know, I should have given it a much important role in my life, but today she's very important to me, you know, and we have a great relationship. And I'm really grateful for that, man. This is the mother of my child. You know, I have the utmost respect for her, as I should have always had. And my child, she's been the hardest one to work on, to regain that trust. She kind of had to deal with some... I mean, basically, I abandoned her when she was 4 and 5 years old, you know, up until the time I got sober this time, which it was, she was 13 years old. You know, she was already in the midst of growing up as a young... adult, a young woman, you know what I mean? And me not being there, I'm thinking I got some right as a father to say what is right or wrong in her life, and it just didn't work out like that, man. It's been a hard road to gain her trust, and but very rewarding. You know, there are times, man, there are times, especially in the early, you know, I just celebrated 6 years, so in the first few years, it was a struggle with her, really was. And I would call up Daryl after visiting her for a while, and I'd just be like, "This is too hard. I can't do this. You know, I'm not a father. I don't know how to do this for this young girl." You know, and he would just have to soothe me and walk me through it, and I'd give it another try again. You know what I mean? And just be uncomfortable, man. Think, you know. I don't know what it is to be a father. I wasn't a father, or a brother, or a son, or an employee for a lot of years, man. I didn't know what it was to be these things anymore, you know. So I get in recovery, and you guys show me, you know. You guys teach me how to do these things one step at a time, man. Sometimes 1 minute at a time, you know. I got a lot of good examples. Stan, Daryl, a lot of good examples of men and women too. Jennifer M. and man, I've seen guys that aren't here anymore. Davy Jones, you know, man, I learned so much from these people, and that's why I say I'm so grateful for the fellowship. It's a huge part of the process of recovery for me. The living examples of people moving forward in life, I need that. You know, you moving forward pushes me forward in life, and then, you know. Step 10, I probably need to work a lot harder on that step, you know. I always hear Matt share about that, like on a day-to-day basis, how he works that one, and I'm just in awe of that, you know what I mean? Just like to be willing to just address those things immediately, you know what I mean? Because I'm the type of person that I'll let it fester, and then I'll realize later on that it's bothering me, and then I'll get a resentment, and then I'll let it, and then it takes a while, you know what I mean? I don't know how to address something right away sometimes, you know what I mean? So I need you guys. I need your examples, you know what I mean? And that's why I say that the fellowship is so huge for me. And then steps 11, seeking God's will for me through prayer and meditation. You know, I spend a lot of time on the road, and I use that in time for meditation. Don't use the radio so much as I use, you know, a conversation with God and to listen to and to just be quiet, you know, to just be quiet and let my thoughts be what my thoughts are and let my feelings be what my feelings are. You know what I mean? Just to feel. And I think that was probably one of the hardest things in recovery too. Still can be, you know, just to feel, you know, not feeling for years and years and years. It's like, I remember like it'd be like, I didn't sleep very much for my first 6 months of sobriety, man. It's just like, my mind was constantly on, you know, like on in the wreckage, you know what I mean? And I remember I'd be watching TV and it'd be a comedy and you could hear the whole crowd laughing and I'd be crying, you know what I mean? With no idea why, you know what I mean? Just processing what was going on inside me, man. It took a long time. And I remember 3 years of sobriety. I'd taken my cake at the 1600 Club, and it kind of hit me. I was like, I think I can do this. You know what I mean? It was like it took 3 years to sink in. Like, I think I can do this. You know, I think I can stay sober. And each year, man, has been like, it's slow growth for me. You know what I mean? It's been really slow growth. Like, I'm not the one to where my eyes are just immediately open to every shortcoming and character defect that I have, you know. It's not until people are like, dude, you're this, or you know what I mean? It's like that I'm, yeah, I guess I kind of am, you know what I mean? And I become willing to work on those things slowly, you know, especially when I see it causing pain in somebody else, you know what I mean? Because that I really don't want to do anymore. I don't want to be that person anymore that causes pain in other people's lives. I've done that far too long. Decades I've caused wreckage in other people's life, whether it was physically, emotionally, financially. I've affected people negatively in every aspect of life. You know, I don't want to be that human being anymore. And that's, you know, some days it's like me and Brendan and I listen to this speaker CD a lot, Earl Hightower, and he talks about trudging the road of happy destiny, and the word trudge meaning to walk with purpose, you know. That's so important to me, you know what I mean? To be able to be an example of restoration and balance and what's to come, you know what I mean? Because I don't know how many days I've stayed sober on what's to come, you know what I mean? And that might not be living in the moment to you, but man, with every door that opens in front of me, I'm like, what's the next door that's going to open? You know what I mean? Because if I get loaded, I know what door is going to open for me. You know what I mean? It's usually a cell door, you know? And that way of life is just not appealing to me anymore. There's nothing about the chaos, the disconnection, the insanity of active alcoholism that is appealing to me anymore in any way, shape, or form. And it's not that I see people, you know, that struggle with it, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you know, I'm consistent in meetings and I see it, you know, somebody be here for a bit and they go and then they come and then they go and watching what's that's doing to them, not emotionally and spiritually and let alone financially, all these other things, physically and financially, watching what that's doing to them internally, man, that it's like destroying them. You know what I mean? And I don't want that for myself. And but I understand at the same time. You know what I mean? I understand that obsession. You know, once that's fired up, it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know, and one of the greatest things I've learned is to not look down upon anybody, no matter what you struggle with. You know, because I struggle with things. Even in recovery, that might come. Meeting's just about over, huh? Thank God. I struggle with things in recovery that other people are they don't even look twice at. You know what I mean? And then so it might be vice versa for me and that person for their struggles. So I'm just, man, to say I'm grateful to be alive and sober today would be an understatement. I got to look at Billy through the whole meeting. Beautiful Billy. Thank you for letting me share.
Great message, Joseph. Hey, let's give another hand for Joseph. Now back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for being of service. I need to shut us off here.